Hello there, this is Samuel Gebre, and in today's conversation, I will be speaking with Tracy Chana, the co-founder of Copy Global, an East African-based e-commerce operation that mainly focuses on the rural population. And in this conversation, we'll try and unpack some questions of why the rural market makes more sense for a platform like Copy and not the urban centers, and to what extent that her operation needs to own its verticals instead of trying to be a very asset-light company. Copy Global has raised some $50 million already earlier this year and is in the process of trying to raise a new round. And without further ado, let's get into the conversation.
Yeah. So could you just give me a backstory of who Tracy is and how she ended up in Copy Global and what you were doing before that?
Sure. Well, if we go back, I guess it started when I was an undergraduate student and I lived and worked and studied in Kenya. This is, early 1990s. A million years ago. And I sort of fell in love with the Kenyan people, in the sense that it was the first time that as an American girl, I had the opportunity to see just how intelligent and hardworking and aspirational and kind of capitalistic and impressive the everyday people in Kenya were, and that the only difference between me and them was opportunity. Sort of the world I grew up in the States was just full of opportunity. Everywhere I turned, I had every opportunity to succeed, whereas in some of the rural parts of Kenya where I lived, there was just such a lack of opportunity all around me. And I never forgot that. It sort of has always stuck with me. And it's what gets me out of bed in the morning today, just being able to work in a place where I can, through my unique privileges and resources and access, I can create opportunities. And then watch, the people who we serve at Copy thrive. So I think it sort of all started from then. I turned 21 in a very rural part of Kenya, which for Americans is a big birthday, because we finally get to have our first beer. I probably had a few beers before that 21st birthday, but we won't mention that. It was transformative to have that experience. So fast forward, Copy is now, the logical place for me to start the business was in Kenya. Do you want me to dive into what it is all about?
Yeah, Copy also, just for the record, I think if someone Googles Copy, they'll find someone else come up with a TED Talk, and it's not your company, right? This is Copy Global. But also, since the 90s is not when you started this company. There's a gap where you did other things before you decided to come back to Kenya and start this endeavor, right?
Yeah, big gap. So I started a couple of other companies in Silicon Valley. Got a graduate degree at Stanford, got my MBA, and started a couple of other businesses. Then I started Copy in 2013, and it's essentially an e-commerce business that's designed for the mass market, so middle and low income consumers, starting in Kenya, and we're now in Uganda and expanding to West Africa soon. So
okay, so just taking it back to the 90s, Kenya had played this huge part in your early life and made you realize you know, the way the world works is a question of opportunities. And then 20 some years later, when you decided, okay, let's do this in Kenya, why did you decide that an e-commerce platform for the small and medium kind of businesses was the way to go?
Well, the original idea was sort of, I had worked in microfinance, and so it was sort of born out of that world. So my co-founder is a wonderful man called Jonathan Lewis, and he loves hot dogs. We were having hot dogs at a famous hot dog restaurant in San Francisco, and we were batting around ideas for me and the next business that I was going to start. And I was working on a few different business ideas, a few different business plans. And we had worked together on some different microfinance projects. And so he threw out this idea of, hey, you know, microfinance loan officers are riding their bikes or their motorbikes, whatever, out to villages every week to collect payments on microfinance loans from local people who have taken out loans. Why don't we give them a catalog, right? Like 1880s technology, paper catalogs, stick them in their backpacks, and then the people in the villages can buy basic household goods from the catalog. And then the next week when the microfinance loan officer goes back again, he or she can bring the goods. And I thought, okay, well, that's a really interesting idea. Combined with the fact that, you know, I went to Stanford, and there's some really, really interesting companies coming out of Stanford that are designed for base of the pyramid consumers, middle income to lower income consumers in emerging markets. We could put those kinds of products into this catalog, because the hard part is not designing products for this target demographic, but it's distribution. Like, that's the hard part. Like, the last mile distribution nut was the hardest one to crack. So that was sort of the original genesis of the idea. And then we ran with that, I asked him, like, hey, can I go do some homework on this idea, research it? And he said, sure. I'm not going to do anything with it. It's a lot. It's a heavy lift to make that thing fly. So I said, well, I'd like to do that heavy lifting. And he said, great. So I ran with the idea, and then I wrote the business plan for what Copia actually became. Copia is short for cornucopia. And there are a few Copias in the world. You're right. So Copia Global is the one we're talking about. And Copia Kenya is the name of the entity in Kenya, and Copia Uganda in Uganda, et cetera. So it sort of morphed from what I just described to more of a, you know, I like quickly honed in on the fact that most middle to low income consumers have mobile phones. So they don't necessarily have addresses, or they don't necessarily have internet access. Very few have smartphones yet, or if they have smartphones, they can't afford data. So there are real limitations to a Western style e-commerce model working in this environment. But I really like held on to the fact that, wow, mobile technologies are everywhere now, and that's game changing, and that changes the economics of last mile. And so we sort of had to throw out the script of what Western e-commerce models are like and start with a blank piece of paper and design a model that works in the context of the kind of you know, peri-urban and rural areas in East Africa.
Yeah, at the beginning, you did say one of the key things that you have to pay attention to when you're trying to do such business is the distribution. So how did you solve that problem from the blank page? How did you set it up to make sure that, you know, you are in the places that you need to be?
Yeah, so when I started the company, this was the key question that every seed stage investor asked, right? Like, how are you going to crack that nut? No one else has. That was probably the hardest hurdle to get over in getting Copia off the ground. So essentially what we do is we go out into an area that has a relatively high population density of low-income people. And we find an existing shopkeeper in the area, right? So these small mom and pop shops that form the informal economy in Africa are ubiquitous. And, you know, so that's the good news. They're everywhere. The bad news is they're quite inefficient. They can't sell very much stuff because they can't afford to stock their shelves with very much. And they don't have much space to stock their shelves. And what they do sell is quite high priced, very expensive. And so they're quite limited in what they can offer. But Copia, in partnering with them, is transformative both for them and for Copia. So they're sort of our partner in reaching that end consumer. So we can't, there's no model, there's no economic model that that's kind of feasible to create a profitable business that would involve delivery to every individual home in rural Africa. It's just too expensive and the average order value is too small. But by partnering with these small mom and pop shops as delivery points, suddenly we have a very safe, secure, very close to the end consumer's home where we can turn them into a delivery point. So just to summarize the way it works, so we recruit a small shopkeeper in the village, and then the end consumer can either shop on Copia's app on their smartphone directly and buy household goods they need, or if they don't have a smartphone, which is the majority of the mass market in Africa, they can go to that agent's shop and use the agent's smartphone and place the order directly through the agent. So the agent sort of holds their hand through the order process. Then Copia kicks into gear and we fulfill the orders, whether it's a sack of flour or it's a plastic chair or it's a radio or some agricultural product or something that they need to run their farm. Whatever it is, we have a fulfillment center and a fleet of delivery trucks, and we then deliver to the agent shop. And the end consumer is constantly getting text messages from Copia saying, you know, your order, thank you so much for your order, thank you so much for your payment. You know, you can go pick up your order. It's now at Messia's shop down the street from your house. And so we've sort of cracked the nut on how to reach a demographic that is still transitioning to smartphones. You know, most places in Africa still don't have personal addresses. So, and many are unbanked. So by enabling the end consumer to interface with Copia through the agent, we've sort of addressed all of those concerns. And as a result have, you know, thousands of orders a day.
Yeah, I was going to go into the numbers of the scale of the operation that's going on right now. But at the same time, to like, what has been the benefit for, like, say, these agents that are now onboarded onto your system? Has there been any changes that you've seen in, like, in the economy around those, like, small towns or around those families? What's going on? Is there tangible, quantifiable things that you have noticed?
Yeah, well, so it's both a significant impact on the end consumer having access to Copia. But just to focus on the agents for a moment, we have nearly 40,000 agents now across East Africa. And it's quite transformative for them. For many, it's a doubling in their income because they get a commission on everything that customers buy. And so For many of them, it's both about increasing their income because of the commission, but also increasing their income because they're not only do they serve as a copia agent, but they're also running their small shop, whatever it is, a fruit stand or a hair salon or a small kiosk selling household goods or whatever, daily goods, whatever it is, it results in more foot traffic to their shop. And that drives up their income as well. So for many agents, it means from, going from poverty to middle class. So there's a massive economic impact that we're having in these areas, creating employment. And one of the things that was that's happened organically, not by design, is 81% of our agents are women. And when you look at the stats on employment and income levels, and the gender disparity in Africa, it's quite exciting that we've sort of become an agent for gender empowerment by enabling these, more than 30,000 women to have doubled their income and create regular, steady employment for them. So they're not directly COPIA employees, not to be just to be clear, but in becoming COPIA agents and adding that business to whatever their small shop is, it's transformative for them.
That's huge, doubling their incomes, and most of them are women. I think if you're in the ESG space, you'd be ticking many, many boxes in there. Can I bring in like some criticism that I've heard sometimes whenever we talk about kind of like addressing the unbanked market in especially in the developing world, and that if the more or less quote unquote the banked in urban areas were available, then would you or someone in your space shift to that market instead? Because like now you're having copier branded sugar, copier branded, other goods, because the urban center is also a market for you, right? With higher spending power. So is that, are you focused on the same market, or is this a market that's opening up to copier as well? And you're thinking of not necessarily switching, but doubling up.
So our mission is very, very clear that we are relentlessly focused on the middle to low income consumer, that the global economy is largely ignored and left behind as not a viable market to serve. And historically, it might have been true that it's hard to reach that demographic if they live in more rural areas, but there are lots of urban poor as well. So we certainly go wherever that demographic is, and everything that we do, our brand promise, our pricing, our product offering, our delivery mechanisms, our customer service, everything is designed around that consumer. So it's sort of unique in the world in that way, because there are other e-commerce businesses in Africa, but they're all focused on urban, wealthy consumers. And they might say that they serve more rural areas, but they price themselves out of that market by charging very high delivery fees. And, Copia is always, all of our deliveries are always free. So that's not prices is something that we focus on as, it's the most important thing to our customers. We have to be the lowest price in the market to meet their needs, because it's the most important thing driving their decision making. So yeah, we will go urban, but the other point to make on that is urban centers by definition are full of commerce. There are vendors selling all kinds of things everywhere. The value proposition of Copia is not as strong when you can just walk down the street and buy a mattress. Don't need, in a more rural area, it's really hard to buy a mattress. You have to travel really far and spend a lot of money on a bus to get a mattress and then somehow lug it back to your village. Whereas in an urban area, it's much easier to access goods and there's much more competition. And also more Western style e-commerce models have the chance of working in more urban areas. So I think our sweet spot is more of the peri-urban areas. You see, urbanization is happening in Africa, but what that really means is people are moving from more rural areas to the outskirts of cities because they can't afford to live in the cities. And what that means is that there are larger and larger populations in the outskirts, but not the infrastructure to support the influx of people, which is perfect for Copia because of the way our model works, you know, where it's very asset light. We can actually set up agents in those peri-urban areas really quickly and easily.
I mean, the asset light part was actually was going to be my next question, but in the sense that how important is it for you, for Copia to, I don't want to use the word own, but, you know, the whole value chain of the, from the product to the agent. I mean, I guess you're not going strictly directly to the consumer, but to what extent is it important for you to have a bigger say in how that is run?
Oh, it's really important. So one of the key unique kind of qualities of our target market is how important trust is. It's just absolutely paramount that our end consumer trusts Copia, because, you know, in the States, it's very easy for me to buy something from a stranger because there's all kinds of mechanisms to protect me in that transaction, right? The rule of law and regulations and so forth all sort of work. But our customers are not used, they don't have that kind of security. So they often go in their purchasing decisions come from a place of distrust. So you really have to earn their trust. And when you do, then, you know, this sort of, it's all rainbows and sunshine. Like then you've got a trusted consumer, a trusted partner. They trust you to bring them the best quality goods at the best prices. And in return, they give you their loyalty and continue to buy from you. So this is a long-winded answer to your question, but we want to control the entire supply chain end to end, from the purchase the customer makes and that consumer experience all the way to the point where we interface with the suppliers of the goods and then deliver on our delivery trucks out to the agent. That whole process, the brains of which we've technologically enabled and control at Copia. The reason why we're asset light is because we don't own the fulfillment center. We lease it. We don't own the trucks. We lease them. And that gives us infinite flexibility to grow as we need to. But the brains behind how it all works is kept in-house. We have a big command and control center inside the fulfillment center that has every order, every delivery, every truck up on the screens at all times. So we have real-time visibility into the whole operation.
Very interesting. I think, and I'm making my own deduction here, but it seems like you have a very kind of a long-term plan. You want to maintain the Copia brand. You want to have, you know, a dedicated kind of customer base that trusts your brand. And I think by partly bringing in a new director who was at Amazon, who's also had a bigger picture kind of approach to it, seems to be, that's what I'm getting. But, you know, when you're working in a space where you have to raise money and, you know, investors kind of like want their returns in 2 years or 5 years in the startup space, how do you balance those two sides of the equation? Given, you know, you raised about 50M earlier this year.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it's sort of, well, So if you look at like Amazon, right, when they got going, they blew through about $3 billion before they made a dime, you know, and many years of, you know, Jeff Bezos saying, we're investing in building something tremendous and world changing and massive. And, you know, and he was right. And it is. And he had the luxury of Silicon Valley investors who have that kind of vision to build something really big. And that's a real luxury. It really is. I think traditional venture capital in Africa has been much more risk averse for good reasons, but much more focused on, hey, let's build something profitable very quickly to mitigate risk. And then we can think about growth after that. And there's a shift happening. You can almost feel the ground moving underneath us in that thinking. Even with the, you know, the capital markets turmoil today that we're all, you know, experiencing, there's still a like longer term underlying trend, shifting to like a recognition of just the massive opportunity in Africa, how huge a market it is across the 54 countries, and recognizing there are 54 different markets, not one, but just the opportunity, both from population growth to growing, you know, GDP per capita, the very young population, the rapid adoption of technology. It's just, you know, the leapfrogging technologies where, you know, for example, the African continent doesn't ever need to build telephony because we're moving straight to smartphones, right? That kind of leapfrogging that's happening really creates just these massive opportunities to build fantastic, transformative Amazon-like businesses across the continent, right? And so, yeah, so you mentioned Jason Murray, who recently joined our board, who was an executive at Amazon for almost 20 years. And he has that kind of mind. He can see the opportunity ahead of us, right? He can see, you know, because he was at Amazon in the early days and throughout its transformative growth, you know, he can see how much opportunity there is in Africa and the potential for Copia. So we like to think of ourselves as, you know, a sort of a platform where e-commerce is only the beginning, right? The basic household goods people buy from us today, like the flour, the sugar, the cooking oil, or whatever it is just the beginning of, you know, once we have that trusted partnership, the next step is, you know, adding financial services and other digitally enabled products where we can really deepen our relationship with that consumer. And you can see that's the tried and true path that other e-commerce businesses around the world have paved. So we can learn from and copy many of those businesses, like, you know, many of the Asian players or Mercado Libre in Latin America, et cetera, are just, you know, a few years ahead of us in terms of the maturity of the market. So we have a huge opportunity ahead of us, I think, and some fantastic investors to support the time we need to make it all happen.
Yeah, I mean, the second layer of where this business can go seems to be, as you say, the most natural thing. Is this something that you're already trying to kind of play around with? Are you in the process of maybe even rolling it out, the financial services, the loans, and etc. to your existing clients?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are very focused on building our core e-commerce business. There's still a massive opportunity for growth. You know, I mean, we can build a $1 billion business in Kenya alone, but have aspirations to grow across multiple countries across the continent. But you know, it's an obvious time for us now to add financial services into the mix. And so we rolled out our first embedded finance product and have another one coming this year. And then sort of a suite of additional financial services will roll out next year. So it's sort of still at the beginning of that journey. But it's, I like to say it's sort of the other side of the same coin, right? E-commerce and then the financial services kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, and not necessarily every market is at the same level. So maybe Kenya, maybe ahead even with regulation and whatnot compared to other countries you're trying to get into. And speaking of regulations, is that a topic of, you know, big worry for Copia as you expand across regions from east even to west?
Well,
especially,
I think,
you know, when you're getting into the payment system as well.
Yeah, so every country is sort of figuring out where they are on how to regulate the massive growth of fintechs on the continent right now. But I think Copia is sort of in a unique position because, you know, our margins come from the e-commerce business. And so the fintech business will add additional profits to Copia, but the key reason why we add fintech is because it drives more e-commerce sales, right? So I think some fintechs will find great challenges as regulations become stronger, because that they're relying on their financial services for their profits. And if it gets regulated down to, you know, those profits get regulated down, they'll be in a tough spot. Whereas for Copia, it's more adding those financial services is more about driving more e-commerce sales and therefore growing our overall business. So they're kind of, it's kind of like a positive spiral. And we also will be partnering with fintechs in many places. Like, we don't want to become a bank, but we have the relationships with the end consumers that no one else has. And we have, you know, we're in daily, if not every other day, contact with our agents and our consumers. So we're sort of in this unique place where, you know, there's an 800 million person middle to low income market that Copia can bring to into the financial services tools and so forth out there. And so that puts us in a good place to partner with existing fintechs. So we don't necessarily have to build it all ourselves.
Yeah, and as you scale, I know you mentioned a few countries, but you know, how do you decide what market to go to next? I know Uganda, like East Africa is already in there, but it's also, you know, not the same, even within the same country, things can be very different. So how do you decide where to go and how are you approaching it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we've done a lot of research literally on every market in Africa. And there's certain criteria that make Copia very, criteria that enable Copia to thrive. So things like, you know, there needs to be a high number of these middle to low income consumers that are our target market, relatively low formal retail. So if you look at a country like South Africa, for example, there are parts of South Africa that have a lot. I mean, it's the most formal retail of any country in Africa, but only in certain parts of the country, right? There are whole swaths of South Africa, particularly kind of in northeast, that have very little formal retail and have a very high number of relatively low income consumers who buy lots of stuff, but it's hard for them to access goods. They have to travel far to get it. They're paying high prices at small shops. And so lots of inefficiencies where Copia can thrive. The other thing, ironically, is, you know, some places, the road infrastructure is tough, just difficult places to reach. And that's actually great for Copia because it means that no competitors can go there, but we're really good at delivery. That whole, the system that we've built to enable deliveries to the most rural corner, the most rural village, kind of gives us a competitive advantage. So, you know, so for example, places in Nigeria have very high population densities of middle to low income people, but quite difficult to reach. And that's great. We're, you know, that's an environment where Copia can really thrive. And then there's lots of other criteria like, you know, phone penetration, smartphone penetration, just feature phone penetration, mobile money, and the adoption of mobile money, you know, and the kind of friendliness to do business in a market, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So you're hoping for a peaceful election in Kenya, as most of us are, I guess. right.
Yeah, we've been through a few. You know, it's interesting, you know, being an entrepreneur in Africa is not like being an entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. You have these shocks to the system that come fast and furiously, whether it's a presidential election that can shut down an economy for who knows how long, because you don't know exactly what's going to happen, if there's going to be violence or any kind of, you know, turmoil. But you also get droughts and you get heavy rainy seasons and you get locust storms and you get some tainted sugar supplies and there's all kinds of different crises that come up. So when COVID hit, you know, I was so proud of the Copia team. They just immediately leaped into action. Nobody blinked. Everyone just kind of started to get creative about how to change our offering, how to change our you know, delivery systems, et cetera, to accommodate. And it was like, you know, another day that ends in Y. Like, it was really, I was so impressed. And, you know, I think that around the world, people should really appreciate just how difficult it is to be an entrepreneur. The kinds of challenges you face in Africa are unlike other places, and it makes them incredibly resilient.
I mean, having lived in Africa, I can testify to that. But it makes it also more exciting and more fulfilling when you do end up having to be creative to solve those problems, and then you see the fruits.
I would say even more than that. I mean, it's just the land of opportunity. Like, I feel like, you know, I walk down the street in Kampala or, you know, in Nyeri and up north in Kenya, or, you know, in north of Lagos, you know, outside Accra. And, you know, everywhere you turn, you just think, I could start a business doing that. Or, oh, look at that opportunity over there. Or, you know, that when there's that kind of change and the kind of massive market opportunities we're talking about, there's just so much room for innovation. It's just a lack of capital. I mean, we just need more capital to come to the continent.
It's funny how we went back to the beginning of it's the opportunity that, you know, to invest in these things that is lacking. It's not, everything else is very ripe.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to see some numbers coming in. Obviously, it's early days, but as the capital markets globally are sort of in a bit of chaos, and, you know, valuations in the tech industry in the West are down, and, you know, the IPO markets have shut down temporarily, and, you know, everybody's kind of trying to figure out what's happening next. And you're seeing venture and private equity investing decreasing elsewhere. We're not seeing that in Africa yet. It may come. Like, look, we're all bracing for a decrease, But the first half of 2022 is up more than 150% off the first half of 2020 or all of 2021, I think, where it's the right stat.
Yeah, we had a figure like this week as well, and we map it out, and you can see the US, Europe, Latin America, Asia, everything is negative. Africa is like positive, and not just slight positive, but you know, a massive positive increase from the first half of 2021. And I found that very interesting. And it's the same things, you know, which we're talking about today, and what people are saying is so much opportunity on the continent to solve, you know, big problems, logistics, healthcare, payments. They're not secondary or inflationary kind of like caused problems that the rest of the world is experiencing. So you still have to solve these problems, essentially. This is what we're saying, right? So as long as you have to solve these problems in the things you're seeing in Lagos, then money will have to flow because there is value in it.
Yeah. I mean, so even in downturns, even in economic downturns, because fundamentally the businesses that are growing right now are the opportunity is so massive, right? That even when there are these downturns or these shocks or a presidential election or whatever it is, we're still growing dramatically. I mean, you know, Kopia has doubled in size for the last many years. And, you know, I don't see that slowing down anytime soon. So the fundamentals and the unit economics just continue to get better and better. And so, there's a lot of dry powder in the coffers of VCs and PEs right now where, and they have to deploy it. You know, they can't sit on it forever. So we might, I will expect that the growth will slow, but we certainly won't see any declines. Like I don't think like we have in elsewhere in the world.
And that's a very good point. Like something I haven't heard anybody else talk about, the fact that there is money that needs to be deployed instead of being deployed in certain markets for obvious reasons. And the fundamentals make sense in Africa. Still, they make sense. So that's a good point. Thanks. Can I ask you some questions kind of like on a bigger picture overall look at the company? Kind of like what's your valuation at, number of employees you have, how many markets, countries are you in now? And then kind of like the same questions, but 2 years ahead in 2024, 25, where do you see those numbers being?
So we are, we're growing so quickly that Tim, our CEO, always laughs at me because my numbers are always slightly behind where we are, but we're at something like 1200 employees now. We're in Kenya and Uganda at the moment. If you fast forward, I think both those countries, well, let me start. Kenya has opportunity to be 10 times bigger than we are. Now we're serving about 500,000 customers a month. And, you know, there's no reason why the business can't be 10 times bigger than we are now a few years down the road. That's the trajectory we're on just in Kenya. Uganda, we just started last year. So it's growing even faster, but off a tiny base, right? So, but I think the unit economics in Uganda are even stronger. We've learned lots of lessons from Kenya so we started with a really fantastic business straight out the gate in Uganda, now we have this kind of replication playbook we can roll out in each new market. If you fast forward a few years, we'll be in West Africa. We're going to launch there next year, which is very exciting, and then have a roadmap to be in 10 more countries thereafter in the coming 5 years or so. So I think we've served about 2 million customers or so to date, but we really focus on that 800 million number across the continent.
If it's a public figure about the valuation you're at or estimates of what the company is valued at, we'd be happy to hear.
Oh, yeah, and I'd be happy to share, except we're right in the middle of raising our Series D, and I don't know what the valuation is going to be. So we'll have to see how the Series D comes together.
Interesting time
And
to be raising, and also good that it's coming at the back of what we just talked about.
yeah, I mean, I think we're realistic about the fundraise and that it may take a bit longer than it otherwise would have. And I think investors are being much more, well, I shouldn't say that. I think African investors have always been very, very thorough with their due diligence, which is good and right, and they should be. But I think they'll take their time. And, there's a lot of internal conversations happening about, where and how do they deploy their capital given the capital markets are a bit different now. And what does that mean in terms of valuations? So I do think we'll see valuations come down. But Copia is in a good place in that we haven't had any crazy high valuation rounds that would mean we would have to do a down round, which is great. I've always tried. And I was talking to another female founder about this. Maybe this is a female trait, but I've always tried to be a bit conservative with our valuation as we go. So we don't end up with some valuation that's so high that we're then at risk of having to do a down round in the future, because you always want to have a nice, healthy step up along the way. So that's sort of how we've built Copia. So I think it puts us in a really good position for a healthy step up in valuation, even in the current market environment.
I mean, I know you said African investors, but in general, has there been kind of like a shift in the conversation when it comes to investment in Africa from general investors, say, Silicon Valley investors, when it comes to Africa? Because the question about due diligence, there have been a few instances on the continent where big money was deployed without real due diligence, and the mistakes were really painful for some of those investors. I don't know, is that a conversation that's happening around the investors you're speaking? Or has
Well, I haven't experienced investors who are not doing their due diligence, but I just observationally, I think there have been some investors where there's a little bit of a lemming mentality. There's comfort in numbers, there's trust in other investors, and so they say, okay, well, if that fund's in, then must be a good one, and I'll jump in too. And so you see that happening. And often that results in valuations that are too high, and investors who are then in an investment where they don't quite understand the full scope of what they're getting themselves into. I hope that that I don't think that that's the norm. I actually do. I am quite impressed with the level of due diligence that I see investors on the continent, investing in. Putting into a company before they make an investment decision. And I will say that I think the ESG movement around the world is great for Africa, because companies like Copia will benefit long term from that influx of capital. And the LPs that are then forcing the GPs and the management of venture and private equity funds to take into consideration ESG, or make ESG demands on their portfolio companies, I think will result in a net huge benefit to many companies in Africa.
I mean, while we're on that topic, can I also just ask if there's a court case in Kenya? I think Flutterwave's accounts were frozen for, I don't know, the investigations going on. But do such instances make investors who are not necessarily, like living everyday life on and following what's going on in the startup space in Africa, does that make them, you think, worry a bit? Or does that even make founders a bit worried about the whole ecosystem?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you never want any bad news to come out of any early stage or later stage growth company in Africa because it reflects badly on the rest of us. So I think, you know, a lot of people get worried about competition and so forth. And I worry less about it because the opportunities are just so massive. So for example, Jumia is an e-commerce business that serves more of the wealthier demographic in Africa. And so we often get asked, you know, how are you different? And it's very easy to explain, right? We serve the mass market and they serve more urban, wealthier consumers. And, you know, the differences extend from there. And they've been through a couple rounds of kind of tough knocks along the way. And that's always been bad for Copia. It reflects badly on us because we're in the same general universe. So, you know, we're always sort of cheering them on because we need to have lots of positive stories, lots of very positive exits from the continent. To raise all boats and to build the overall ecosystem, which is, you know, on a personal level, important to me for the continent.